3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the 45th anniversary of the remarkably durable breakthrough album by Yes that's turned out to be anything but fragile.
I was always convinced, and it sounds a bit egotistical, but I don't mean it to. I was always convinced that when we did Fragile, all the time that we were recording it, writing it, and putting it together, that it was something very, very special.
Probably around Fragile was the time that I started to become a little bit more like a director. They used to call me Napoleon. They never told me to my face. It didn't matter, you know, I didn't care as long as, you know, it was happening. Later I learned the word catalyst. Long distance, hi, this is John Anderson and you're in the studio for Fragile.
Hello, this is Rick Wakeman in the studio for Fragile.
For many people, critics and fans alike, the essence of rock and roll has always been its simplicity, its rebelliousness, its pure, raw, adolescent energy. But as the 1970s began, there were others who believed it was possible to broaden the scope of rock and roll without diluting its power or its energy. They were serious musicians, often classically trained, who saw rock and roll as a means of serious artistic expression, a true art form. The problem, and it still exists today, was that many of these so-called art rock bands believed that serious music and mainstream popularity were basically incompatible, that any band who sold millions of records must have compromised their music to do it. But in 1972, the British band called Yes released an album that sold millions of copies without a hint of artistic compromise. It was filled with bold instrumental experiments, classical arrangements, and unusual rhythms. It was a delicate balance of diverse sounds and styles, and perhaps that's why they called it Fragile. Yes released Fragile January 4, 1972. It was the first Yes album to include keyboard player Rick Wakeman, who was the final ingredient in the delicious mixture that was the classic Yes sound. A perfect addition to John Anderson's vocals, Chris Squire's bass, Bill Bruford's drums, and the unique guitar stylings of Steve Howe. With his musical resume prior to joining Yes, here's keyboard player Rick Wakeman in the studio.
I was very lucky. I came from a very musical family, and my father encouraged me tremendously. And I started piano lessons when I was 5, and I did. I had a private tutor until I was 18, and I went to the Royal College of Music and did 2 years there. I also did clarinet, church organ, orchestration, and modern music while I was there. And I left a year before completing my course to get my degree. And it was a gamble when you look back on it, but it was one that I had to take. I'd started doing sessions from playing for different people, and I was interested in the new electronics of instruments that were coming out, although there was only things like the Minimoog and the Mellotron available, really, that was all. But I was desperate to try and improve the relationship of the keyboard within a band, because it was always before the organ that rarely got heard anyway. And I just really thought there was a tremendous future for it, and I was interested in it. And I sort of poked my nose in a bit. And I realised that there was a gap, but the problem I also realised was that if I finished my course for another year, I wouldn't be able to put a full-time thing into what I wanted to do, which was help develop keyboards and bring those to part of the music. But if I didn't, somebody else would. I was very well aware that the course of musical history was not going to be changed by me, but I could be part of it if I wanted to be. So I went to see my father and I said, I'm quitting college. And my mother just freaked my mum out. But I did it, and it was tough. My father said, OK, he said, well, if you're going to do that, he said, it's not all going to be a bed of roses. You realise that it's tough, you know, because, you know, it doesn't all happen overnight, and it might not happen, and the percentages are bad for you. And I said, that's true. I played in pally bands, jazz bands, pubs, anywhere where I could earn a couple of quid. I played in pubs for £3 a night, anywhere where I could get just, you know, enough money to keep going. Because a lot of the sessions and the things that you did, you really didn't get paid for. Good sessions, the rate then was £9 for a good session. You see, you couldn't live on it unless you were a real session musician and did loads and loads a day. Which is, in fact, what I ended up doing. I got onto Fixer's list and just played. I did about nearly 3,000 sessions in the space of 4 years.
Remarkably fresh, vibrant, and well-recorded, the 8-minute song Roundabout became an unconventional hit for Yes off of the fourth album, Fragile. Lead singer John Anderson decodes the lyrics for Roundabout.
Roundabout was actually formulated in Scotland. We were traveling through from Aberdeen through to Glasgow. And we'd started the song by the time we were in Aberdeen. Me and Steve were singing it in the back of the van on the way down. And one of the things that you'll drive through is a very winding, small road that goes through this incredible valley. And the mountains are sheer from both sides of the road. You just climb up to the sky. And because it was a cloudy day, we couldn't see the top of the mountains. We could only see the clouds, because it went sheer, straight up. And we were just driving down this incredible valley. And I remember saying, oh, the mariners, look, they're coming out of the sky, you know. So we wrote that down, the mariners come out of the sky and they stand there, you know. And then we came to a roundabout right at the bottom of this road. And within 24 hours, we would be back in London. We'd been on tour then for about a month. So it was sort of 24 hours before I'll be home with my loved one, Jennifer. So the idea was 24 before my love, I'll be there with you in and around the lake. Just before you get to Glasgow, there's a lake, a very famous one, the Loch Ness. So we were driving in and around the lake, mariners come out of the sky, they stand there. What we always tried to make sure we wanted was a lot of harmony. Me, Steve and Chris singing together had a certain texture, and we worked on that all the way through that period of time. And the strong melody, sometimes very, very simple. The end of Roundabout, we sing da 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 da. Very simple melody, repeated 8 times. Over that, there's another melody. Ba ba ba, ba ba ba, 3 blind mice. 3 blind mice. So, the way it was put and where it was positioned, it sounds really like, wow, that's really interesting. But I knew it was 3 blind mice, and when we did it, I didn't mind. I just knew that where we put it made it sound totally different, you know?
After the release of the Yes album in 1971, Yes toured America for the first time, opening for Jethro Tull. It was on that tour that the band realized there was a significant audience that was receptive to their brand of complex, densely orchestrated music. John Anderson of Yes.
We did an American tour that really energized us incredibly. We really wanted to get back in the studio and make another album quickly, because we knew that we were on a sort of a roll on many levels. And then all of a sudden, there was this definite feeling of, well, we've got Steve and he's very multi-talented. Maybe we should look for a more multi-talented keyboard player. And that's when Rick Wakeman joined the group, who was the sort of darling of the university colleges. He was the man to go and see, because he was very talented, very individual in his style. And we actually did a concert with the group he was playing with. The group was called the Strobes. And we did a concert, and I watched him, and I saw a really great talent playing away, very young, and he joined the group. So again, we were really injected with that energy again, and that came out in Fragile.
Rick Wakeman was a well-known session keyboard player before he joined the Strobes, working with David Bowie. That's Wakeman on Mellotron on Space Oddity. Wakeman recalls what his life was like in 1971 when he was invited to join the band Yes.
I had a small house, struggling to pay the mortgage, all the usual things, and I decided that I was going to leave and go back to sessions, because at least doing the sessions I could make a living. I didn't want to, but that was the situation. And I got a phone call from Chris Squire, which was about June or July of 1971. They just returned from an American tour, their very first tour. They were going to have a few changes, and they decided that they wanted to have a whole new direction in their music. You know, they were after the sort of a continuing of direction in the orchestral rock vein. And to cut a very long story short, we ended up having a rehearsal together, and we ended up writing in the first week Heart of the Sunrise and Roundabout, which just completely freaked me out. I mean, I came back really excited, because I felt that here was something that if this didn't capture people's imaginations, then it really was back to sessions.
Yes, lead singer lyricist John Anderson tells us the backstory on the song Long Distance Runaround.
To me, Long Distance Runaround was, when I think about it, it was how religion had seemed to confuse me totally. It was such a game that seemed to be played, and I was going around in circles looking for the sound of reality, the sound of God. That was my interpretation of that song, that I was always confused. I could never understand the things that religion stood for. And that, over the years, has always popped its head up in the songs that I've been working with. Just that inbuilt confusion since I was a child. Fear of the Lord, you know, you have to fear death and... What do you want to give a child such a dark way of looking at life for?
Former London Boys Choir singer bass player Chris Squire, nicknamed the Fish by his mates, harmonizes with Yes lead singer John Anderson on the Fragile medley, Long Distance Runaround and the Fish. Next, Yes lead singer John Anderson and their new keyboard player at the time, Rick Wakeman, discussed the high standards that resulted in Fragile being so durable. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear what you missed at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with John Anderson and Rick Wakeman for the 45th anniversary of Fragile by Yes.
Hi, this is John Anderson and you're in the studio for Fragile.
Hello, this is Rick Wakeman, in the studio for Fragile with Redbeard.
Thank you, guys. It's the 45th anniversary of the Yes Breakthrough album, their fourth. The once and future keyboard player, Tony Kaye, had left Yes after their first U.S. tour, but the rest of the band wasted no time in filling the key man position with Rick Wakeman. Here's Yes lead singer John Anderson in the studio.
Within the space of 2 weeks after getting back off tour, we were in the studio because we realized that, hey, there was a lot of people out there. There's a lot of people getting to be excited about what we're doing. So we're more excited about what we're doing now than we ever were. So let's get on with it. And that's what we did. I think it took... Fragile took 4 or 5 weeks to record. And as I mentioned, Rick coming into the group made us work faster and harder than we'd ever done before. We were working, you know, 16-hour days without stopping, really, maybe one day off every couple of weeks. It was an inspired time, totally inspired by the music. The music we were working on was so new and so fresh to us that it was pretty easy to get out. Probably around Fragile was the time that I started to become a little bit more like a director. They used to call me Napoleon. They never told me to my face. But it didn't matter, you know, I didn't care as long as, you know, it was happening. Later I learned the word catalyst. And I think that's what I was. I was a sort of catalyst that I would make things happen. Because I didn't want them to sit around just playing da-da-da-da music. They had great talent. I wanted to hear something inspiring.
Rick Wakeman's addition to Yes on keyboards was not without compromise on both parties. In spite of his classically trained background, Wakeman had become known for a flamboyant stage presence and his improvisational keyboard techniques, strikingly different from the rest of his new band. In time, though, Rick Wakeman began to appreciate the differences and even to admire them.
I couldn't believe the attention to detail. I mean, we would spend 3 or 4 hours just musically discussing three bars, whether the link was right or not, and trying it all different sorts of ways and coming back to where we started. And I thought, this is totally over the top. This is totally unnecessary. But at the end of the day, after all those hours were put into the little bits, when you listen back to some of the tracks, you realize that it's those little attentions to detail that make the pieces what they are.
South Side of the Sky gave both instrumentalist Steve Howe on guitar and Rick Wakeman on grand piano the space to spotlight their considerable musical chops.
I'd read an article that said that sleep is death's little sister. And I thought that was very poetic in many ways because most of us haven't got a clue what real death is about, and it's always been used in sort of very dark terms, you know, you're going to die. Very, very strange attitude about it, because life is beautiful. Why shouldn't death be beautiful and death be an extension of life? So that was South Side of the Sky, that attitude that we keep climbing that mountain, we keep pushing harder in order to reach the top of the mountain, when in order to reach the top, you have to go through transitions. And maybe one of that is eternal sleep or that next life span. It was very mystical, I think, South Side of the Sky.
Still to come, we'll venture deep into the heart of the sunrise. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and catch Yes and your other favorite records at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with John Anderson and Rick Wakeman in the studio for the 45th anniversary of Fragile by Yes.
Hi, this is John Anderson, and you're in the studio for Fragile.
Hello, this is Rick Wakeman, in the studio for Fragile, with Redbeard.
Thanks again, gentlemen. We're marking the 45th anniversary of that landmark album, not only for Yes, but for the rich, fertile period that marked the zenith of 1970s progressive rock era. Fragile was one of the first critically and commercially successful attempts at recreating orchestral sounds with synthesized keyboards. And as Rick Wakeman explains, the number 7 UK, number 4 US chart success and iconic stature decades later proves that the musical risk-taking was justified.
The great thing was that nobody really had come out of college or music school and gone into this side of music before. And if they had, it was into the sort of the session world where they played their notes and that was what that's all they did. Where I suddenly found that I had a part to play was because a lot of music writers, had the basic songs and their chords and their various things, but they were limited to the amount of chords that they knew. They were limited to the amount of musical knowledge they had. And they were, in other words, it limited them to what they could do with their song. In other words, they had a great sketch, but they might have only had red and green to play with in their paint pot. And what they found by dragging old Muggins in here was that I didn't have the sketch, but I had a paint pot with all the colours in it. Yeah. So I could turn around and say, look, you need to do this here. You could change that chord sequence there. That'll be much better. And you do that. And you became almost a rock and roll orchestrator. We were convinced that music, musicians of the so-called rock age, or some of them at least, should be taken seriously. That's what we wanted it to do. Of course, we wanted to make commercial, viable records, and we wanted people to buy them and enjoy them. We were convinced very much that we wanted to change things. The attitude that there was two sorts of music, the one that you made the pop record that sold millions of copies, and then there was the other musician, the underground musician, which was very much for people who wanted to discover music, but it wasn't out to the people. It wasn't available for everybody, really. It was something that you almost kept to yourself and took home, that sold. It was almost a bigger success if it sold 18 copies rather than 18 million copies. You know, hey, this album just sold 8 copies. Oh, wow, this must be really good, really good.
That's pretty funny. The rock writers loved Fragile by Yes. It still earns 5 stars from the All Music Guide. And with an edit of Roundabout, a surprise number 13 hit in America in 1972, the Yes Band returned to America as headliners. Again, Rick Wakeman.
The record company had no idea what we were doing. And because they had no idea what we were doing, they left us alone. We knew 80% what we were doing, but 20% we didn't know what we were doing. And there weren't all the wonderful effects and things flying around then, so what you did, you experimented wildly and trying to do things, and tracks came together, and there was all the merging of different ideas. And when that appeared, it freaked the record company and a lot of people out, because it was just sort of almost over the top. It was just broke all the rules in long pieces and different sorts of moods within pieces, very complex and things.
That 1972 U.S. tour was a triumph for Yes, and in particular for Wakeman, who soon emerged as one of the first superstar rock keyboard players, a spectacular figure on stage, with his colorful capes and mane of long blonde hair, surrounded by stacks and stacks of electronic keyboards and amplifiers.
It was a marvelous period of time because everybody within the band had great ideas of things that they wanted to do and also were tremendously supportive. I'd always dreamed of putting more than 2 or 3 keyboards on the stage, of putting like 6 at least around and piling them on top of each other. And nobody had ever done it. And also there was the problem because nobody knew how to monitor it. Nobody knew how to do anything. And the great thing was that all the guys said, go for it. I said, look, there's going to be problems. There was no mixing desk or anything for keyboards and all that. I said, it was literally having different amps set up. I mean, I had about 7 or 8 Fender amps, you know, for each different instrument. What we were convinced was that you could make a sort of a, I suppose, for music that was in the underground tradition, But you could do it and present it in a way that it was available for everybody to enjoy, or not enjoy, as the case may be. And that's really what we set out to do. We wanted it to be promoted as if you were promoting a pop album. But saying, but hold on a minute, we want all your promotional aspects and all the things, and we want to go out and play, and we want to put on an outrageous show, but we also want to be recognised that this hopefully is music that won't be forgotten like the normal pop music in a month's time, 6 months' time, or a year's time, or the odd track might just get pulled off. But what we would really like to happen is that in 20 years' time, that a jock on the radio somewhere could pull a track off and play it, and it would not sound out of place. I mean, the end product of that album was very important to me. I was always convinced, and it sounds a bit egotistical, but I don't mean it to, I was always convinced that when we did Fragile, all the time that we were recording it, writing it, and putting it together, that it was something very, very special.
The Heart of the Sunrise will finally shine brightly into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as the long-denied band Yes has finally been voted into the Hall. Not by rock critics, mind you, but by millions of active progressive rock fans. The cruel irony of this progressive Pyrrhic victory is that Yes co-founder and mainstay throughout every album and era, Chris Squire, Chris died before getting the long-deserved recognition. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, John Anderson and Rick Wakeman. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.